The hour of 8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum, and we do have minutes to be approved. Representative Leslie Gard moves approval of the March 3rd, 2020 minutes. Any discussion on those minutes?
Before you get started.
Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote on the March 3rd, 2020 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. Our minutes are approved. All right. First bill up on the calendar today is House File 871. Chair Davids, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move House File 871.
Very good.
And then, Mr. Chairman, to get the bill in the shape I would like, I have the would like to move the DE1 amendment. And before we vote on that, I did talk to the department yesterday about that. They haven't thoroughly examined the amendment yet. So if we could discuss it, put it on, discuss it today, realizing that there will be further discussions with the department and interested stakeholders to see, that make sure this thing works.
That sounds good. Chair Davids moves the DE1 amendment. Any further discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The DE1 amendment is adopted. Chair Davids, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 871 as amended. What this bill does is it allows pass-through entities that are not allowed to pay their taxes as one entity. The income would be able to flow through owners to shareholders who would file, they would file their taxes, and they could file as a C-Corp, is basically what we're doing here. So if there's a partnership, an S-Corp, an LLC, they can file their taxes as an S or as a C-Corp would. This means the taxable income would be based on the amount of sales in the state rather than based on residency, like it would be taxed for pass-through. So this just gives them another option on how they could file their taxes. And again, this is a work in progress, but if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go to the testifiers, if there's anybody who wish to testify on behalf of the bill. If there's anybody who wish to testify against the bill, I'd just soon not hear from them today.
Thank you very much, Chair David. So we have Beth Cadu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Yes, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I thank Representative Davids for bringing forth this bill today and for Chair Marquardt for you hearing it as well. We are in strong support of this bill as we believe it will help improve the competitiveness of Minnesota's business climate for some of our pass-through entities, but with also the added benefit, if you look at the revenue estimate at this point, with not triggering a revenue cost for the state of Minnesota. This bill will help some of our pass-through entities that were the most impacted by the federal cap of the state and local tax deduction of $10,000 on their individual income tax return. If you look at the revenue estimate, it shows that about 87,000 taxpayers were impacted by that cap. Pass-through companies make up the vast majority of our businesses. Over 90% of our businesses are pass-through entities, which means they pay their business tax on their individual income tax returns, and they employ, the last statistics I saw on this was over 56% of the private sector were employed by our pass-through entities. The federal cap made Minnesota's top income tax rate even more impactful because our taxpayers were really feeling the full impact of our high income tax rates. Minnesota's top rate, as you know, is 9.85%. We're currently fifth highest in the nation, just behind California, Hawaii, New Jersey, and Oregon. Oregon also allows already a deduction for some pass-through income. New Jersey just enacted last year a similar proposal as this bill is. So we're seeing that our taxpayers might be even paying more than some of those higher tax rate states. This would be definitely a benefit. We hope you can include it when you're looking at your omnibus tax bill. I'm going to end my testimony here because we do have a tax practitioner, John Kammerer, that I think can better explain the bill and the details of it. And so with that, I'd love to have John be able to come up.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ms. Cadoon. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Marquardt and other members of the committee.
My name is John Kammer. I'm a tax partner here at Redpath & Company in St. Paul, where I spend most of my time working with these pass-through businesses that are headquartered here in the state of Minnesota. I'm a graduate of Winona State University, a member of the AICPA, the Minnesota Society of CPAs, and also on the advisory board of the S-Corp Association. I'm here today in strong support of HF 871 as amended, legislation by Representative Fred Davids, because the bill would help thousands of closely held family businesses in the state of Minnesota, and with the benefit of being revenue neutral, will help make Minnesota a more competitive place to do business. As has been stated, like C corporations, S corporations are subject to state and local tax on their business income. Unlike C corporations, however, where the taxes are always paid at the entity level, pass-through businesses are subject to state and local tax for the most part on their individual level, on their individual income tax return. Only a few states there's an exception to that where the tax is paid at the entity level. As a result of federal tax reform, this distinction took on new significance as those states that allow the entity to take that to pay the tax on behalf of the shareholders were still allowed to deduct for state and local taxes. But other states, such as Minnesota, where the tax is paid at the individual level, are now subject to that $10,000 cap. This policy puts Minnesota businesses at a disadvantage as the loss of the SALT deduction or state and local tax deduction costs Minnesota businesses $3 to $4 for every $100 they earn, which is a significant additional cost for all the Minnesota pass-through businesses, which I believe there's somewhere around 165,000 S corporations and partnerships in Minnesota. The bill would allow Minnesota S corporations, partnerships, and LLCs an election to pay this tax at the entity level, and provide owners of these pass-through entities an exclusion to not be subject to double tax at their individual level. Effectively, the bill would allow the full deduction for state and local taxes again to Minnesota taxpayers, all while being revenue neutral to the state treasury. So a quick example of how this would work. I work with a contractor that's headquartered here in Minnesota, but also does business in Wisconsin. Wisconsin recently passed a legislation similar to this that allows the entity to pay the tax on behalf of the owners. So on their Wisconsin source income in 2018, we made an election to have pay the tax at the entity level. So the owners got a benefit for the Wisconsin taxes they paid, saving them roughly 2% on their Wisconsin source income. The bill, if passed, would allow the Minnesota owners the same benefit if they did that job in Minnesota as opposed to in Wisconsin, creating incentive, obviously, for doing business here. Minnesota wouldn't be alone. As was mentioned, several other states have passed legislation. Connecticut, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Rhode Island, New Jersey have all passed this legislation in the last couple of years, and several other states are considering it, such as Alabama, Arkansas, and Maryland. I think the bill as drafted does a great job of restoring the full SALT deduction. That being said, there's a couple clarifying things we'd like to see as it moves through the legislature, just to ensure that there's no double taxation at the owner level. In conclusion, there's no valid reason for allowing C corporations the ability to deduct their state and local taxes and not providing that same benefit to pass-through entities such as S corporations and partnerships. State taxes are an obvious cost of doing business and should be treated as such. The bill would reduce this unfairness and decrease the effective rate paid by Minnesota taxpayers, all by being revenue neutral to the state treasury. So it's a win-win for Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Kammer, thank you so much. And we'll hear from one more testifier, then we can open up the questions. So Mr. Hickey, I think. Good morning. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members, got delayed by a train, so I'm maybe have my coat off. But anyways, hey, thanks for the chance to speak on this briefly. I want to thank Representative Davids for bringing this bill forward on behalf of our members that would benefit from this. This is another thing that could help a small business struggle with what we feel is a bad tax climate in this state. And so appreciate you considering innovative ideas like this, and it'd be nice to add this to what we can accomplish this year.
Very good. So are there any questions for any of these three testifiers? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. So I'm just wondering, what would happen to these pass-through entities that elected this option if IRS or the Treasury doesn't allow this workaround for the salt cap? What would happen?
Ms. Cadoon.
Yeah, I'll just mention briefly what we've kind of heard so far from the IRS on this, which is the bill was introduced last year. We didn't really push it last year because we knew at that point the IRS was looking at some of these salt kind of workarounds that states were doing. And so we thought it was probably just best to wait to see what the IRS would do on this. At this point, they have been silent. They have actually ruled against some of the other salt proposals in other states. But this one they have not addressed at all. It's now been some taxpayers have actually been filing under it in other states. So we do think at this point it seems like it's a viable option. I don't know if John wants to add anything to that.
Yeah, I can real quick.
Mr. Kammerer. Right up to the mic.
There's historical. Other states have allowed similar options long before there was a $10,000 cap in. The IRS has always respected that. I mean, obviously, that takes on new significance now. But the businesses were always allowed to take the deduction for those state and local taxes. So we feel pretty comfortable that there's long precedent to allow this.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. But my question is, what happens to the entities if the IRS does clamp down and doesn't allow these workarounds? What are the implications to these entities?
Mr. Kammerer.
I mean, obviously, it would depend on what IRS decides to do if they were to challenge it. Again, we feel pretty confident in this. If they were to do it and suggest that it was a tax paid on behalf of the owners as opposed to an entity-level tax, it would probably be treated similar to the Minnesota composite tax now, where the tax paid by the entity on behalf of the shareholders is effectively treated as a distribution to those owners. They're relieved of their individual filing obligation, and then the distribution of those taxes is then handled personally by the owners. Many states have a composite income tax provision. Minnesota is one of them. Wisconsin, a lot of other states allow for simplification by having the entity file on behalf of a large group of individual owners that are non-residents. We think it would be handled how they handle that stuff today.
You know, kind of off what Representative Schultz is saying, if I'm correct, if you elect to take this, you're locked in for 4 years.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And I think the question is, I mean, is there any way if the IRS was to do something that we could back these pass-throughs out so that they wouldn't be penalized? Is that federal law where they're locked in for 4 years, or is there some escape valve, let me put it that way, that would be possible?
Yeah.
Ms. Cadoon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would think, I mean, just with that in mind, I guess we could draft it that if it was disallowed at the IRS, that Minnesota taxpayers are no longer locked in to requiring, you know, having this filing at the entity level. So that might be a good provision to include. I think when you ask if the IRS disallows it, I mean, obviously, if they're disallowing it, they're going to owe more on their federal taxes is ultimately what would happen.
Chair Davids.
Well, my answer to that question is we're the tax committee. We can do whatever we'd like.
Yeah, that is true. Very good. Representative Schultz, anything else?
Yeah, one more question. I think this is for the Department of Revenue. I'd like to know where they stand on this bill now that more states have passed this legislation.
Very good. One is, Ms. Bears, do you want to come forward? This would probably be a good time.
And Mr. Chairman.
Chair Davids.
As I said, the initial bill was 2 pages. The amendment was 9. And I did meet with Commissioner Bowerly yesterday and some of her staff and said, we're going to work through this. Take your time to look at it, and we'll have further discussions if necessary.
Sounds. Thank you. Ms. Bears.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Representative Davids had stated, we are still reviewing the amendment to kind of determine how that would impact Minnesota, or just like the conversation had, how it would impact if the IRS decided to deny it.
Thank you. Anyone else have questions for any of the testifiers? If not, I know we think this is revenue neutral, but there are some unknowns. I wonder if Ms. Templin couldn't come down and just talk to that for a second.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. You should have a revenue estimate for Representative David's bill, House File 871. And the Department of Revenue did score this bill as unknown. Unknown means the revenue impact is, it cannot be predicted if it's either positive or negative. We don't see in the tax committee a lot of estimates that show unknown or undetermined. It's pretty rare, but sometimes it does happen. For this estimate, the Department of Revenue scored the bill that way for a couple of reasons, which are discussed on the second page of your revenue estimate. One of them being is that the Department of Revenue does not know how many taxpayers will have more than 50% ownership in qualifying entities. And so without that information, they cannot quantify the revenue impact up or down. Additionally, the estimate goes on to describe that it is assumed that an entity would file as a C option corporation if the majority shareholders benefit from the election with a reduced combined federal and state tax liability. There's a lot of factors that are unknown and for the estimate at this time that cannot be quantified.
Ms. Templin, thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. So is there any other people in the audience that would like to testify on House File 871? Members, any other thoughts or questions for the author? Chair Davids, thank you for bringing this forward. Any closing comments?
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you go up to the IRS building in Washington, D.C., above the door it says, taxes are what we pay for a civilized society. Minnesota is a little more civilized than most states. That being said, when it comes to, my mother, God rest her soul, never told me life would be fair, but it is a bit of an issue of fairness in that a C Corp can do this. Partnerships, LLCs, subchapter S's cannot. All we're doing in this bill is they can elect to be treated like a C Corp. In this case, the higher tax states, the more civilized states, if you will, really got hit by the SALT limit. And this, it makes no sense to me that a C Corp doesn't have to abide by that. Everybody else does. All this does is it gives people another option, or businesses another option, to be able to declare their tax status as a C Corp.
Thank you very much. Chair Davids moves to lay over House File 871 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Now going to turn the chair over to Representative Les Legarde.
Nice job, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We're a little more civilized.
I like the gun rest of the show best.
Yes. 1996, she passed away. She's quite a lady.
Okay, the bill we have before us for consideration is House File 3882. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 3882 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill.
Okay, Chair Marquardt moves House File 3882 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Chair Marquardt, please introduce your bill.
Well, thank you very much. House File 3882 is another option to address this like-kind exchange Section 179 expensing fix. So if you remember on the first day of the session, first day of the committee, we heard House File 3023, which was one option. And basically what that option did was basically recognize the gain on the like-kind exchange that matched the depreciation for Section 179. So it kind of evened everything off, if you remember that. With the idea that our ultimate goal is to get to full Section 179 expensing. That is the ultimate goal. And so a little bit of a history on House File 3882. So the first Friday of session, Representative Baker was very nice to host a meeting in Wilmer that addressed this issue. And there was a number of farmers, implement dealers, CPAs, and we were around this table. And the strong consensus of that group in Wilmer was the number one, do the full conforming on the one Section 179 expensing. But as we had a very good discussion, a couple options came up that if we can't get there, what are some options? And one option that came forward was House File 3882, the Wilmer plan. And so John Christensen, who is a CPA, was one who really kind of brought that forward and talked about it. Representative Baker asked him to be here today. So what this does is it just carves out these like-kind exchanges. So it would go back retroactive to 2018 and 2019, and it would say on these like-kind exchanges on personal property, those exchanges under Section 1031, that the federal government in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 said, we now are going to recognize that gain on the like-kind exchange. And remember, I've used the example here where a person trades in a tractor for $100,000 and purchases a new one for $200,000. Under the federal law, that trade-in of $100,000, which before was not considered as a gain, now is considered as income, before it could be deferred. And so what happened to farmers again and small business owners is that in 2018, they had done their planning, they had traded in, bought equipment, and the planning was that was not going to be a gain. When we went retroactive, which was the right thing to do, but all of a sudden now, we went retroactive on conformity on the federal now recognition there, and we did not fully conform, and all of a sudden they got hit with these pretty big tax bills. So what this would do is carve out those like-kind exchanges and say, to those instances, we are going to apply the Section 179 full expensing. And so basically what that does is for those retroactive like-kind exchanges, the treatment now would be the same as the federal government law, is that you would – so what you would have is you would have the gain of the $100,000, but now you would be able to deduct, depreciate the full $200,000 of the new you put in. And so what would happen is you would actually have about $100,000 expense, increased expense, which would lower your taxes to that. So that's what this does. And idea is to ultimately get to the full expensing. And the cost on this would be $12.6 million in this biennium and then about $15.2 million into the next biennium. So it's a little higher cost than 3023, but it's not the $200 million that I think Section 179 full expensing would cost. So at this, if I might, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn over to Representative Baker, who, like I said, hosted that meeting. I know Representative, Paul Anderson was also at that meeting. And Representative Anderson, if you could also come down here too if you wish, but he was at that meeting. But if you would say a few words, and if Mr. Christensen also would talk.
Representative Baker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Marquardt for accepting the invitation. And it took us a couple of times to get you out there. But again, we have some amazing people and ideas out in Willmar in the Candiac County area. My friend and my accountant, John Christensen, is here because he hosted this meeting in his office. And without taking a lot of time on this, I just want to, again, thank the chair for listening to us. I knew that this is a absolute number one priority this year, is we have to get this thing right. And I fully support the full conformity, and Representative Marquardt knows that. This is another option to look at, but we cannot go home unless we make this one-time fix the right way. But because of the farmers and the business owners that were in the room and John's knowledge of this issue, I felt it was important to bring him here. And again, I want to also recognize Representative Anderson for being there. We collaborated that day. It was a lot of really good thinking, a lot of maybe not necessarily new ideas, because these guys have done this before. But thank you again for coming out, and I appreciate that. I'm going to turn it over to John, and I do have to go to the other meeting upstairs. I've got other constituents. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Christensen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. And my name is John Christensen. I'm a CPA partner with Christensen PLLP in Willmar, Minnesota. I've been preparing taxes for over 35 years now in the Willmar area. Our practice is focused on ag businesses, which include farmers and ag processing companies. And so I thank you for allowing me to testify this morning on House File 3882. I do want to thank Chairman Marquardt, Representative Baker, and also Representative Anderson for taking the initiative to meet the area CPAs and farmers and implement dealers in the Willmar area on Valentine's Day. I think the meeting was good, but I think this was a lot of ideas were talked about, and it was to me it was real legislating at work. Democrats and Republicans working together, listening to constituents, coming up with a plan that works for them. Initially, I contacted Representative Baker because I saw the disproportionate Minnesota income tax being imposed on farmers and small business owners who need significant equipment for their businesses, for capital intensive businesses. And we all recognize that Minnesota conforming with the federal small tax cuts and jobs acts of 2018, which doesn't recognize like kind exchanges of equipment, but recognizing that without conforming to the full Section 179 election of $1 million created a Minnesota phantom income on these trades that was real to the farmers and small businesses. You know, I have clients who have just with this current tax season and the, you know, farm taxes that have been filed that have actually written checks of over $200,000 to the state of Minnesota for Minnesota income tax due to this, I call it a glitch, a phantom income that's created in the Minnesota tax law. Right now is a very bad time to require farmers or small businesses to write those kinds of checks just with the farm economy, and most of them are working. We're working with them trying to obtain financing for operating lines of credit for this current year to plant their current year crop. So we really appreciate the quick response of the legislators in coming up with a fix for this bill. And I think 3882 does fix the issue, the current issue at hand regarding this phantom income. And I think it's imperative that something is passed during this legislative session, because there's going to be many taxpayers that are going to be harmed greatly if something doesn't get fixed. The limited Section 179 allowed during the limitations that are placed on House File 3882 does have some limitations, and it does fix the singular issue of this phantom income, which is very important, but it does create some other issues associated for the farmers. And one of the things that does is that it does create a bifurcates the Section 179 election, where you have a farmer who has traded in a piece of equipment is allowed to take Section 179 on that piece of equipment and expense the cost of that equipment. which is important because whatever he traded in, we're going to have to recognize the gain on that. So that's important. But for someone that buys that same tractor, as an example, but doesn't have equipment to trade in now, is going to be subject to the Minnesota 80% add-back of the Section 179. And so it does bifurcate, it does create different tax treatment for relatively the same transaction that takes place in the business. It does require, you know, tracking of other things. It does lend to potential gaming of the Section 179 deduction, you know, quite honestly, because there's ways that someone can potentially buy a tractor. And if I don't trade anything in, I'm going to have an 80% add back on my Minnesota income, taxable income. If I pull a wagon out of the Grove and I trade it in on that tractor, now I'm going to be allowed, because it's a trade-in, I'm going to be allowed a full Section 179 expense collection on that tractor. And so that's one of the things, even though it's imperative we do get something passed to handle this bill, there's some issues that I think need to be looked at, because I think ultimately there's an opportunity to get full conformity with the Section 179, which I think would serve the taxpayers of Minnesota. With that, I guess I go back to the issues that we look at with this issue is real for small business owners. It's not just farmers, but any business that's capital intensive is facing this issue. And I think that, you know, I would suggest that, you know, now is the time for full conformity with Section 179 with the IRS. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions from members? Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Lisselgard. And Chair Marquardt, I really want to thank you for this bill. This bill, of course, in history now will be known as the Wilmer Plan. I hope that we can move forward with the Preston Starbuck Plan, which just kind of takes care of everything. That being said, to Mr. Christensen, okay, now not that I'm a schemer or sneaky or anything like that, but let's say I have a tractor. The basis is $50,000. I want to trade it on a $200,000 tractor. So if my dealer, after careful investigation of my tractor, can say that's worth $50,001, I've had a gain. So I can write the whole thing off. Is that correct?
Mr. Christensen.
Accelerate the depreciation under this bill.
That would be correct, because the bill's written, if there's a gain on that trade-in, then the full Section 179 would be allowed on the traded piece of equipment.
Chair Davids.
That will work. That works. No, but so I really think members, and we've talked about this before, and again, I thank Chair Marquardt for bringing this forward. This is an important step, but and you know, we may have some off ramps if we get in a conference, we can't do the full Section 179. I understand how that works. But I'm really hoping that this committee and Chair Marquardt and others, I know that you really like the Preston Starbuck plan better, but realize that I'm just hoping we can get there, because you can see on my next tractor purchase, it's going to be worth $1 more than my basis. And I can accelerate the depreciation on the whole thing, and it's perfectly fine. There's no tomfoolery, skullduggery, or shenanigans going on here. It's the way it is. And I can see the equipment dealers who will start a new cottage industry, advertisements in the newspaper and on the radio saying, bring in your trade, we'll give you $1 more than your basis. And it's perfectly fine. That's actually not bad. Way to go, if you think about it. But of course, the Preston Starbuck plan is preferable, but I do thank Chair Marquardt for bringing the Wilmer plan together. I was thinking Yalta or something, but I guess it's Wilmer. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, kind of picking up where Representative Davids left off, I used to work at a CPA firm, and I've defended clients in sales tax audits. And my experience has been, when we create gray area like this and a potential to game the system, the person that loses is the business owner. The Department of Revenue doesn't lose. And even if they win, even if they can, you know, go through this whole process that Representative Davis just said and substantiate it with facts and figures and numbers and data, they still will have to pay between $3,000 and $5,000 to their accountant, to their lawyers. And I, in my experience, it's been literally the clients told, just pay them because you're going to end up paying us more. Can you just speak to that? Because I just feel like if we're creating a gray area, the only winner will be the Department of Revenue. And the losers are going to be the businesses because they're going to spend a whole lot of money defending themselves.
Chair Markward?
Yeah, no, I'd like to answer that. So we just had a bill that dealt with salt, trying to work around something the federal government did that we don't know for sure what's going to happen. We know that the big problem right now is the like-kind exchange. That's the, and that's what I heard in Wilmer.
Yes.
And, you know, when we went, took the legislature out to Winona for the mini session, that's why it's good to take the legislature out of this little capsule here and go out to Wilmer and go out to Winona and these places. You actually hear what's going on sometimes. This will address that. And so that is the number one goal. And it's significant. As Mr. Christensen said, some people have $200,000 bills. This will take care of that. This will eliminate that. And so basically the treatment would be the same as they're getting right now in the federal government on the like-kind exchanges. Is they're having to recognize the like-kind exchange, but then you are depreciating the full value of that. That's what that does. And you know, if we would have had a tax bill in 2018, that, you know, you, the retroactivity thing would not have been such a huge deal. But the fact that we didn't and we had to do a bill in 2019, we had a lot of things to work with on the retroactivity, and we're trying to correct this one situation, which I think this will do.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I understand that, but I think in theory this is a fantastic idea. In practicality, from someone who's worked at a CPA firm, I see holes this big in this. So I'd like to hear from the CPA what he thinks.
Mr. Christensen.
Well, I would agree that there are, that the bill does leave gaps to essentially game the system, if you want to call it that. And so, I mean, from a tax planning perspective, there would be, you know, there would be, I can't, you know, I would see from a tax planning perspective that most of my clients that need the expense deduction will have something to trade in that will create a gain on major equipment. Now, it doesn't have to be a tractor for a tractor. It can be equipment of like-kind assets that can be traded in. And I use the example of taking a wagon in that I'm going to get a small gain on in terms of allowing to get the Section 179. But I would state that, you know, there's a I don't know how it relates as far as the cost of this legislation, but I would say that it is imperative that some legislation does get passed this session, because I've got tax clients, small business clients that absolutely can't afford the tax bills that are going to be coming, that they have now or that will be coming now with the 2018 retroactive notices going out.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I appreciate that. I do. And we do absolutely need to do something as a full 179 conformity. We absolutely have to. I'm just saying, if we choose this path, we are literally creating some gray area. And I'm telling you, Department of Revenue will win every time. They'll find some way to say, no, we're not going to allow that, or that's too high. Or I've defended clients, and I know what they're going to say. I know what they're going to do. That was, you know, they have their view, and the business owner has their view, and it's going to cost the business owner $3,000 to $5,000 in my experience to defend themselves. That's my caution in doing it this way.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Markwood, I appreciate you continuing to work on this issue. Representative Baker and Representative Anderson for getting their local folks together, and Mr. Christensen coming down here. I will say, I was not aware of this like-kind exchange issue until we had a meeting in Moorhead with the Moorhead Chamber in Miskadoon. She was instrumental in getting that meeting together, some farmers and accountants and things, so I appreciate the attention on this issue. Just so I'm understanding this correctly, now you had a bill earlier this session, Representative Marquardt, that basically had 80% add back for these. It was like a 20% you could take out for the like-kind exchanges?
20%. 20%. Okay. Mr. Chair, what that bill did, instead of having to recognize 100% of that gain, you would recognize 20%.
Okay.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so with respect to the retroactivity of this bill, it would still, I mean, people could still take advantage of this going forward also, correct?
Chair Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lean, on the like-kind exchange portions that we're referring to, yes.
Okay.
Into the future also.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so with respect to what Representative Davids and Representative O'Neill, some of their concerns, I mean, is it possible we put in some sort of a ratio so that the trade-in has to be three-quarters, two-thirds of the cost of the new piece of equipment, and if it's less than that, you know, we could do something where there would be the add-back component from your first bill. I mean, I'm just trying to think of some other ways we can address some of these issues.
Chair Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Lee. We certainly could put safeguards in. Farmers right now need relief. And I am not aware of farmers gaming the system. This will solve that problem. The University of Minnesota Extension Service says farmers have suffered income losses for 6 years in a row. Income levels are the lowest since the 1980s. They're going out of business. And they're getting hit with some bills right now. And now they're going to have to worry about trying to get their crops, well, first of all, they're still harvesting, trying to get corn off the fields. Sugar beets were left in the fields. Potatoes left in the fields. We need to get this done. Now, this may not be perfect, but as Mr. Christensen said, that $200,000 bill that farmer got, this will take care of that. And that's what we need to do. If we need to put some safeguards, we can do that. But what I'm hearing here is a bit disappointing. We've got to get something to farmers right now this session. And this will do that.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I agree with you. We need to continue working on this, and I agree with you on full 100% full compliance. The general public out there really doesn't understand why we're making a big deal out of this. And so I would like to comment on a few things. One is there are some small businesses, farmers, that actually had these like-kind exchanges and trade-in equipment before the previous law that put this liability on them. They were even unaware of that. And why is that important? Well, just think of those that have cars, that own automobiles here. If you were to trade in your car for a new car, and then later on found out that trade-in value was going to be charged as an income against you, and you didn't even know it, you'd be up in the arms about that and certainly dealing with a tax liability. And if you could indulge me just a little bit, I want to put it into a comparison to our everyday life. We all like to go on vacations, right? At least most of us do. And my wife likes the ocean. And so if I'm planning a trip for the ocean and we start on the trip and we stop at the biggest ball of twine and we go to Hershey's and do a tour of the chocolate factory, but just before we get to the ocean, we stop and turn around and go home, there'd be a lot of disappointment out there, right? And that's not something that we promised. Well, this bill is that. It certainly gets us part of the way there. And I appreciate that. But it's not where we want to go. It's not what we promised. And so if there's anything that I can do, and I'm sure others around this table here too, to help you, Mr. Chair, in getting us to that full compliance, we'd be glad to do that. And whereas I know that this is something and it helps with all of that, it's really not what we promised. I think we could do better. I think we have the opportunity to move forward and get it done without gamesmanship, without gaming the system from either the IRS or the individuals. You know, we've had this in bills before. We did have in 18 a tax bill that had this in it. It didn't make it across the finish line, but we've tried in the past. Let's let this year be the time in which we actually get it done. So, Mr. Chair, I'll help whatever I can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Petersburg, you're right on. Thank you for that. And also to remind members, we also had full Section 179 expensing retroactive in this 2019 tax bill also last year.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Chair Liz LaGarde. And I'm disheartened when I hear that my chairman is disappointed. We don't mean to disappoint. In fact, we are thanking you for bringing this bill forward. It's much better than the first one you had. And I see a trend here. I see going from not so hot to pretty hot to really hot, just smoking hot. I can see it coming. So please don't be disappointed. Although my mother, God rest her soul, said sometimes you just have to live with disappointment. But I wouldn't be disappointed in this. I really wouldn't be. Now, as far as something my good friend Representative O'Neill said, your bill would create gray areas. I must respectfully, I don't like to disagree with you. I must respectfully disagree. It's not gray. It's the law. It's right there. When the gentleman said that there could be gaming of the system, it's not gaming of the system. It is the system. Okay, there's no gaming there. And thank you, neither of you, for saying the word loopholes. That's about a 30-minute speech for me on that one. So, but just, and I don't like correcting chairman. You don't live too long that way. But we did have a tax bill in 2018. It was an amazing tax bill. It was an amazing bipartisan tax bill. It would have taken care of all this. We wouldn't be talking about this right now. We'd be having a cup of coffee in our offices. So we did have a 2018 tax bill. And, Mr. Chairman, you're exactly right, 2019. It was in there as it left here. So I'm actually quite encouraged by your bill today that it's going further. But as we've heard testimony from every major group in the state, the chamber, the NFIB, the business partnership, every group wants full Section 179 as a top priority. So please don't be disappointed because you're getting better, Mr. Chairman. This bill is better than the last one. But we can do this. You have full support from my side of the aisle, and you have supported this in the past, and that's encouraging to me. So, again, let's go from the Wilmer plan to the Preston Starbuck plan and the Lyon County plan. I think that's a pretty good one, too. We can do this. We have to do this. And as I said, and this bill today is a lot better than nothing. But I've always figured there's one way to get to the top, start there. And we can start there by doing the Preston Starbuck plan. Thank you, Chair Liz LaGarde.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And let me just clarify, I'm not saying that farmers are gonna game the system. I'm saying Department of Revenue are gonna look at it through that lens. That's my concern. I have defended clients and I can tell you what Department of Revenue comes in and says. And they, you know, I've had so many clients that have had tax bills between $30,000 and $40,000, and I work to, you know, prove them all those things we have to prove, you know, you have to provide documentation till we got it down to about $3,000, to which we literally advise the client, just pay the Department of Revenue $3,000 because it'll take me another $3,000 worth of hours to get you all the way to zero. So which one do you want to pay? Do you want to pay them or do you want to pay us? So that's what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying farmers are gaming the system. I'm not saying business owners are gaming the system. I have defended plenty of them when I worked at the CPA firm. What I'm saying is if it's possible to go somewhere, as Representative David said, and get a trade-in value that's a dollar more, then yeah. Department of Revenue will figure that out too. And then they'll come back and say, that's not acceptable, it's really $1 less, and you lose the whole, you know. I'm just concerned about the reality of what could play out, because I've seen the other side of what Department of Revenue does, and at least in my experience, it's been not always very pretty. So that was my cautionary tale, and that was my concern with this.
Any other questions from members? We do have testifiers.
Oh.
Nope. Go, Representative Fabian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Marquardt, thank you. I came in late. I had a bill up in the Capital Investment Committee. It got to be a long discussion. But for me personally, this is an extremely important issue, and you and I have had this conversation. And I'm just going to redouble my efforts to try to get this body to move to full conformity with the retroactivity component in there. We had an extra $200 million in the forecast that came out in February, and I'm sure that this is a repeat of what other people have said. But this is an issue that, you know, if we went up to one of the cafes uptown to have a cup of coffee and we walked from booth to booth and talked to folks and asked them what they know about 179, there's a strong likelihood that they would look at us like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So it's really not an issue that that resonates with a lot of folks out there in terms of them knowing about it and wanting to support you or not support you because of that. But this is the right thing to do. I mean, this is something that we've all agreed to, and it's the right thing to do. Let's take the politics out of this particular issue, and let's do what we've all committed to do in the past and get this done quickly so that we can get some assurances out to those businesses and farms that are being impacted by this. I talked to a friend of mine the other day who is putting his production loan together, and they are looking at borrowing $30,000 against their production loan in anticipation of this possibly not getting done, and now they're going to borrow money to pay revenue. This is something, folks, that we need to do. This is the right thing to do, and I hope that we can come together as a body, take the politics out of this, take only trading and all that sort of stuff. Let's just do the right thing and give these people some assurance. This is a very difficult time in the agriculture community in particular. I know Representative Marquardt, Chair Marquardt, comes from a very, very fertile farm area, as I do. But these people deserve us to take this action and get this done as quickly as possible, and I certainly hope that we do. Thank you.
Any other comments from members, questions? Okay, our first testifier is Mr. Burns. You come down. State your name for the record. On deck will be Mr. Laurie, if you want to come on down.
Thank you. I'm excuse me. I'm Tom Byrne. I'm a CPA from the Carlson SV CPA firm. We're a regional CPA firm focused mainly on ag. We have four offices in Minnesota, three in Wisconsin. The discussion before this has been very good. I've known John for a number of years. I didn't realize I had five more years of experience than he did. Me and I look much younger. But in any sense, I am actually sitting on a number of farm loans that farm returns that should have been filed on Monday. But because of this particular issue where they would be paying Minnesota income tax on at least $300,000 more that they did not receive cash for just because of trade-in. And if you file a return, sometimes you're making an irrevocable election. So I said you're going to end up paying some underpayment penalty, but I think we need, I think the state of Minnesota is going to handle this, and then we can look at the options and file your return timely before April 15th, or at least know more of what we need to do at that point. I do have an example of a client that in 2018, without knowing necessarily the where the state stood on this, traded in a combine, and I understand it's the numbers are a little bit high from most people's concepts, but it is a very capital intensive business. The trade-in to purchase a list price combine with all the heads was about $880,000. The a combine and heads that he was trading in on this have a street value of about $155,000, but because dealerships and why you see so many dealerships, they're incentivized by sales. The more the sales, the bigger discounts they get from their manufacturers. So their incentive is to raise the trade-in as high as possible. And so they gave him a trade-in value of $413,000. In last fall, they got a bill from the state of Minnesota for $70,000 more taxes that they owed because they did that transaction. And of course, at this point, they paid it and hoping that this legislation will change. The TCGA, you know, 1031 had a number of negative impacts on small businesses. The trade-in, you pick up on 4797, so up on the schedule. The 179 and the bonus depreciation appears on the Schedule F. So the farmers that were trying to work with their income, so they always had income, so they paid into Social Security or were able to fund retirement plans. With these trade-ins legislation at the federal level, and I understand here that you don't have ability to change that, of course, hurt us continually. I did talk to a large bank in the area, and this additional taxes that are caused by the trade-in, they pointed out that the ones that are struggling are probably not trading equipment, but they're going to get there. And having this extra tax on top of what they're trying to do. So when they're looking at trading in a piece of equipment, they also need to look at the additional Minnesota tax they will need to pay on that. I want to speak strongly, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here, that we need to do something. I would prefer, from a practitioner standpoint, for a simplicity standpoint, that there's full 179 adoption, but this helps us get out of a significant issue at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. Our next testifier is Mr. Laurie, and please keep in mind that we have several testifiers, so if you can keep your comments short, that would be appreciated.
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I'm the Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And we've been on the record on this issue before, so I'll work to keep it brief in stating our strong support for full conformity with Section 179 for equipment expensing. We share that goal with Chair Marquardt, of course, and you know, believe strongly this is the right time to make that investment in farmers. Just talking with a farmer on another issue this morning, you know, he is diversified, well-capitalized, looked on by his community as successful, and we were talking about something else, and he shared that he's not able to cash flow. He's been operating at a loss for so long, and he's having to refinance. And that's a common story. And I think full conformity with Section 179 will help folks cash flow, help reinvest in their business. And I think it's a good use of that one-time surplus in that investment in farmers. That said, so appreciate you making sure that all options are on the table. I know Saturday before session, you met with some of our members up in Ada, and that's exactly what you said you'd do, and that you'd be right out of the gate with all the options on the table, and we so appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you. Next testifier is Mr. Hickey.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey, National Federation of Independent Business. I want to thank Representative Marquardt for a second try here. They're getting incrementally better. And obviously, we've just got a collective support here to do full Section 179 conformity. Representative Marquardt reminded me that last year some guy came in here and said it's in the House bill, it's in the Senate bill, the governor has spoken out in favor of it. What could possibly go wrong? And we know what went wrong, a budget negotiation. That's what went wrong, and very few of us, or none of us, were in the room. That's what went wrong. So hopefully this is finally the year. Can't keep putting off important conformity pieces like this. Hopefully no bad budget negotiation this year, and we just have a meeting of the minds of the Tax Conference Committee and get this done. I know the Senate strongly supports it, too. So thanks for this bill also.
Thank you. Next testifier, Mr. Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Todd Koch. I'm a CPA that practices in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, and we serve many small businesses, and I'm here on behalf of the Associated Builders and Contractors because this issue is not just a farmer issue. Yes, it impacts farmers, and it impacts them greatly, but it impacts all small business owners. Yes. And what's really happening here is on the federal level, they didn't. The old adage of you shouldn't pay tax when you don't have cash or the ability to pay That was the reason that there always were like-kind exchanges. Now, at the federal level, they said, no, you have to pay income tax on like-kind exchanges, but we'll let you write off the full amount as depreciation. So in other words, they simplified things and got to the same spot as if they didn't record the gain. Unfortunately, in Minnesota, unbeknownst to the mechanics, I'm sure, we're recognizing the gain, even though people have no cash nor ability to pay because they just took this piece of equipment and traded it in. And yet they're getting the depreciation over extended periods of time. And that is the issue, is that we're asking people to write checks for income that they received no cash for. And it's due to the way our depreciation system works here. And I appreciate Representative Markwart taking care of the bill and making it simpler, because your initial bill worked. But with that 80% deferral of the gains, because it matched our 80% deferral of the depreciation, right? But then they had to pay people like me more money to keep track of those calculations. So let's make things simpler. Let's pay the CPAs less to do returns. I'm all for that, because I'd rather do less work for my clients on compliance and do more work for my clients on helping them run their businesses and make more money for the state of Minnesota and themselves. And we're really looking for those opportunities to make things easier and better. This does solve a definite problem: taxing Minnesotans on money they did not receive, income that's in essence phantom income. So thank you for addressing that. It'd be even better if we could get to the place where we thought we were last session, when 179 was in the House and the Senate and the governor and magically disappeared at the end. Or there's another bill that's coming up that has other options. Options are good. Where we are is not. So thank you for making things better. I appreciate you allowing me this time.
Thank you. Mr. Holland. And after that, it'll be Mr. Popple. Please state your name for the record.
Jason Holland. I'm a farmer producer, soybean producer in down at Wells, Minnesota. I'm a sixth generation farm, and this really hurt us this last year. In preparation for my 2018 tax returns, my accountant decided that we should file for an extension because of what was all going on with this. With this bill and law and how the state of Minnesota was going to handle it. In October, we got the bill, and the $200,000 that we've been talking about, I was way over that. It affects us dramatically. The farm economy right now is not very healthy, and I had to mortgage a sixth-generation family farm to pay my bill in October. I'd really appreciate if we could get this thing taken care of, because it's really weighing on this farm economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Popple.
Hi, good morning. My name is Kevin Popple. I'm a first generation farmer from Albert Lea, Minnesota. My wife and I also own a dental office small business in Albert Lea, Minnesota. And so my perspective, I'm coming to you today as a farmer because it's much more dramatic for us in agriculture than it would be in our dental office. However, I don't want to take away the fact that it does affect our other small businesses in a way that affects me as a farmer as well. One of the things that has been talked about in the room today is very refreshing to me, that all of you are on the same page that we need to do something. And I really commend all of you for that, because you're doing your job. So thank you for that. To me, this should not be political, and it seems like it always is. If I can please encourage all of you to not make this political, to be sure that we actually get something done. I have an example for my operation that I think you need to really look at and understand in order to fight this battle. It's hard for you if you're not a farmer or business owner, sometimes I would imagine, to understand what impacts this might have. But the changes to the Section 179 bill has created major financial fatigue. I call it fatigue. It's a very broad term, but for some of us, especially a first-generation farm, you guys, I started out in major debt. Major debt. I started from scratch. Unlike Mr. Holland, who maybe took over a farm from his dad or his grandpa, I started out with all debt. These changes have really been had a huge impact on me, and frankly, to be completely honest with you, if this would stay exactly the way it is today, with no conformity at all, my business will likely fail in the next 2 to 3 years. I'm going to give you an example of why. If you look at the old Section 179, if you will, if I traded, and in fact, I did trade a sprayer this last year. That sprayer of mine was worth $200,000. The new one that I bought was $500,000. Those are big dollar amounts, okay? In the old system, you looked at the boot price, if you will. Obviously, we needed to take care of that part. But there was really no financial gain because there truly wasn't a financial gain. We did not have income from that trade. With how things are today, I would have to pay that $200,000. I would have to put that on my tax return. Mm-hmm. Guys, I didn't make that money. How can I afford to pay that money if I didn't make it? I have been running at a loss since I started farming. And you might wonder, well, why are you doing it? Guys, most people are running at a loss. It just depends on how deep their pockets are. I want you to keep that in mind. It doesn't matter if you have money in the bank. This is still taking money out of the industry. I would also encourage you to think about the small communities and even the large communities that you guys all represent. There is a trickle-down effect that is going to happen that no one's talked about here today. If I don't have money to spend, what happens to the Ace Hardware down the store? What happens to that John Deere dealer or that Case International dealer and all the jobs that are associated with that? They'll have to make significant changes just like I've had to do. And it isn't good. Our state has been an agriculture state, and I'd like to keep it that way, but this is a significant impact. It's much greater than I think we're all giving it credit for. Heck, I don't think I gave it enough credit until I started to get the bills in the mail. I didn't understand it. I'll be completely honest with you, and I still don't understand it well enough right now to sit here and be an expert on it. However, I can speak from my own experience. In my case, just with that one piece of machinery, my tax bill would have been $13,000 more than had we kept the old Section 179. However, my operation and what I've had to do to allow myself to farm the 1,600 acres that I currently farm, I've created another business where I work for other farmers. It's custom application and consulting. Take that $13,000 and multiply that times 7, because that's how many pieces of machinery we trade in and trade out each year to stay up with technology. Not only that, but it triggers events that start to happen. Somebody talked about my investments. Well, if I get into a loss position, which we have been, and we continue to get in a much greater loss position, now I can't put money into my IRA. I cannot write off my health insurance. There are many trickle-down effects, and I'm just scratching the surface here. But moreover, think about my tax liability. We're talking $200,000, $300,000. Life isn't fair. I realize that. But this is way beyond that. This is far beyond that. So I would truly ask, and I would commend you for going down the right path. And I think, something is better than nothing. I really have to say I appreciate the effort. I just hope and pray, I really encourage you, we want and we need full conformity. We absolutely have to have it. And I'm sitting here before you today telling you that I, as a producer, as a business owner, will do everything I can to help, whether that be sitting here testifying, talking with the members that you recommend to us. This is a big deal. It's very, very critical to our community, to my family.
Thank you. Were you done? Thank you. We have one more testifier, Ms. Hansen Glazer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Amber Hansen Glazer. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. I just want to echo the sentiments that have already been put before you today and thank the chairman for putting this bill forward. The two gentlemen that just shared their stories are the ones that thousands of farmers across the state are facing in this situation. So we appreciate the chairman bringing this bill forward, that if we can't ultimately get to full conformity for Section 179, there's an option on the table to fix the predicament that we found ourselves in. But obviously, I think that what's being discussed today is that full conformity is the best option moving forward. But really appreciate that this bill's on the table to make sure that we aren't in the same situation in a few months. So appreciate all the work that you're doing. We'll do everything we can at Minnesota Farm Bureau to continue to push for Section 179 full conformity. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify before or against? Seeing none, any closing comments, Chair Marquardt?
So, well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for this discussion. And you heard from Mr. Holland and Mr. Popple, farmers that testified. This is the big issue, and it has to do with this like-kind exchange. That's why they're getting hit, is because of what the feds did on now recognizing personal property like-kind exchanges. This takes care of that problem. That takes care of it. And if Section 179 full expensing was so easy to do, we'd have it in law right now. That's why I think it's the responsible thing to do is to come up with options. And this, like I said, will deal with this huge problem you've been hearing farmers talk about in these very, very difficult times. And I will say, I don't know what our target's going to be. That $1.5 billion surplus is one of the shakiest surpluses I have ever seen. First of all, about $491 million has to go back into the reserve from what we took out to pay for the next biennium. When that, and I see Chair Carlson here, when that budget forecast came out was right at the time the stock markets were going wild over the coronavirus. And so if we put all of our eggs in one basket, we may have nothing at all. And my goal is to get full Section 179 expensing. That's this committee's goal. But if we can't get there, I want to make sure we have something in place that takes care of our farmers and small businesses in this situation. And House File 3882 will do that. So I'd like to, make a motion to lay over House File 3832 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill.
Chair Marquardt renews his motion to lay over House File 3882 to be included in the tax omnibus bill.
Members, thank you so much.
I think I hit it a little too hard.
Thank you. Representative Swazisky, we actually have another idea that we heard in Wilmer. They actually had brought up the fact, why can't you carry over Section 179 in certain situations? We said, we have a person who's got a bill that does that. So, Representative Swazisky, would you care to move your bill?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3136 for possible inclusion in a future tax bill. You know, folks, we heard from the testifiers before about the rough economy that agriculture and other small businesses are dealing with right now, whether that be agriculture or petroleum retailers or whatnot. And so, you know, currently both Section 179 and bonus depreciations are under that five-year add-back rule. And this means that for the 5 years after you would purchase that equipment, you get an equal amount per year to add back for your deduction. And essentially what we're trying to recognize, and I think if you really look at the fiscal impact sheet here, it's in your packets, it's a fairly large number. And why is that? It's because there is a lot of bonus depreciation and expensing that is simply not being captured within that first 5 years. Because of low income, whatever that issue might be, those are real issues that, you know, if, you know, we've heard over and over again from previous testimony, we need to do something. But I think just the fiscal impact of what my bill is moving forward is that, well, if it's only good for 5 years and we try to move it past that, it's obviously a lot bigger number. So the actual capturing, the actual help, the actual diversion we're trying to get to businesses and farmers across the state, you know, I think this bill recognizes that for that. And so I know there's a couple folks that want to testify, and I'd really like to open up for questions as soon as possible if there are any, and hear from the people on this.
Very good.
So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. And so we have Ms. Cadoon.
And also it looks like there's a phone that was left on the table here. I don't know whose that might be.
Welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank Representative Swadinsky for bringing this bill forward and for the chair for hearing it. We're definitely in strong support of this bill as well. This is just definitely a fix that is needed because Minnesota is not fully conformity on Section 179 as well as bonus depreciation. I would mention if you do fully conform on Section 179, which we hope you do, we're in strong support of that, you would still need this fix for bonus expensing. You can see from the revenue estimate that's been provided that about half the cost is because of lack of conformity with bonus expensing. So we would still need this fix. And the other thing I would mention, similar to the bill that I testified on earlier, is C corporations already have this carry forward provision. So this would be treating our pass-through entities the same and comparable as our C corporations on their ability to use this carry forward. And it really, as mentioned, it really deals with the situation when our taxpayers are in loss situations and cannot utilize this expensing that we're not fully conforming on. So we want to make sure they have that full ability to expense this provision in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Next, Tom Byrne. Welcome again to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you. Again, I'm Tom Byrne from Carlson SV in New Ulm, Minnesota. I looked through this bill, and working with agriculture, you're always looking at what options you have. And generally in years that they purchase equipment, they may postpone some of the other things that they do, defer grain, they may prepay. And then in the subsequent years, if we don't have full compliance with 179 and, of course, with the bonus going forward here, they may not have the income necessary to take advantage of what they were not allowed in the year of the purchase. So having the ability of this bill to say, okay, there's years, subsequent years, because there's quite often when I complete a return, I look at it and say, well, they don't owe any Minnesota income tax, but they also wasted a deduction that they should have been allowed earlier, but they weren't. It's spread out through the years. And so this bill would allow us to do a little adjusting and say, okay, as you're aware in the farming community, it's not that you cannot necessarily predict the future very well. There's good years and bad years. There's been more bad lately, but in good years, it would be nice to have the access to this and not waste the deductions.
Very good. Any questions for the testifiers that we've had so far? Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else that would care to testify on House File 3136? Please state your name. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Hickey again. Hopefully I haven't worn out my welcome here. Just wanted to make a brief comment and thank Representative Swadinsky for bringing this forward. Another good idea, another good tool. There are some really low incomes in small business and farmers. Mr. Chairman, you mentioned about the down farm economy for 6 years in a row, I believe now. And so a lot of people can't take advantage of these deductions or have enough income. So extending it out 10 years could certainly help. People's fortunes can turn around in a 10-year period. It's a very long period, and they could find themselves being able to take advantage of more deductions than one might have thought, you know, at a low point in their enterprise or their farm. So another great idea. Maybe we can just put them all in one big package, and let's do it.
And Mr. Hickey, you're not going to say what you did last year, are you?
Well, actually,
Mr. Hickey.
Mr. Chairman, I actually feeling, you know, with all the positive karma in the room here today, I am feeling strangely optimistic. And once again, I really ask the question, what could possibly go wrong this year?
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 3136? If not, representatives, any members, questions for the author? Not Representative Swedzinski, would you
help
closing?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you again for hearing this bill. I think, you know, it really just brings flexibility. It's recognizing the unique markets that we have, what we're dealing with right now, and will allow another tool in the toolbox for businesses to stay in the hands of those folks that most want to have their hands on those businesses. Thanks a lot.
Very good, and thank you. And Representative Swedzinski moves to lay over House File 3136 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much. And again, this was another idea that came forward at the Wilmer meeting that we had. And again, I want to emphasize again how important it is to get out and listen to folks around the state. It's really valuable, really important. So Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I came in late, and I apologize for that. But I'm curious to know, and you mentioned somebody did about target for the committee. Where are we at in that process?
Representative Fabian, we have the chair of the Ways and Means here, but I think within probably about 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Would that be fair looking at this? Representative Chair Carlson?
But that would be a good estimate.
About 2 weeks.
So,
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Chair Carlson, for the folks who might be listening today, can you kind of explain what's going on? I'm going to say behind the scenes, but I don't mean anything, you know, condescending about that. I think that it's important for folks to understand what it takes to get to the point to where we have a target and we have a budget resolution, and then we can start actually doing more serious work. Not that this isn't serious work, but more work to get towards where we want to be.
And just for those who might be watching, this is our chair of the Ways and Means Committee, Representative Carlson.
Chairman, it's really no secret what's going on. We just got the forecast, and the next step in the process is that some of us, the Speaker and I, and probably the Majority Leader, and just to name a few, will be meeting with all the division chairs and asking them what their priorities are. And I can share with you with two questions that I will ask of them. You know, what do they need that would fall into the category of permanent funding or ongoing funding, which is a much smaller number than what may be available for one-time funding. And a question that I'll probably pose then to the ones that we're visiting with, are there some things that you absolutely need that fall into the category of one-time funding as well? And so what I would suggest to the minority party is to work with your leads and, you know, work with the chair of the divisions and make sure you've got input, you know, through your leads or through your members. I would also suggest for people on both sides of the aisle that you if there's legislation you're interested in and you don't happen to be on the division, be sure that you reach out and talk to the chair. Things are going to be moving fairly rapidly. You know, we had a late start by design, and so now we do have the forecast, and so that's the next step. And that's basically the way both sides of the aisle have always operated, you know, working with your division chairs and full committee chairs, obviously, with the chair of taxes here.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank Chair Carlson for those comments. And I think he's right on that, you know, there'll be so much, I don't say permanent funding, but ongoing funding, and then there'll be a larger amount that is one time. And as we look at the Preston Starbuck plan, that is largely one time. There is some money that goes on further, but that's where most of the money's going to be. That's what it would take to do this, because the largest part of this plan is the one-time funding and not ongoing. There is some ongoing, but not a whole lot. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Peters.
Thank you, and to that, Mr. Chair, you said it was difficult to solve the 179 process, but we've done it two or three times already. It's not difficult to do. It's difficult to find the funding for it. So just remember, I think we could do it this year.
Getting it over the goal line. Just, any other Representative Lessigard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, you know, I there was a lot of passion in the room today, and I heard the word politics. I'm probably the least politic guy one way or another, and the pain is real that we heard today, but so is the passion. I have seen Chair Marquard and Poppy coming from Greater Minnesota to work with other rural legislators, and they are so committed to providing relief and helping their brothers and sisters in the farming and ag and across this state. So, you know, I know people think it's always politics. I'm not political. I want to help people, but I also know Chair Marquard, his heart is to do whatever he can to help them. So I just wanted to say that comment.
Any other comments for the good of the order? If not, members were back on Tuesday, Wednesday again, no tax committee meeting, but the division will have this time slot, and we'll come back then next Tuesday. So everyone have a good weekend.
Dinner.
Best wishes to everyone's hockey teams. I know some had more success than others last night. We won't go into that. So members, have a great weekend. We are adjourned.